Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Jeff, let's get a weather check.
Oh, is it that time again?
Yes. It's
weather on the ones?
It's eight after.
Oh, late.
Weather on the eights.
Yeah. It's, I think it's raining.
Does it matter?
No. Yeah. Haven't gone outside.
Maybe it's raining, maybe it's not.
Not going to go outside. Doesn't matter.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. Going to be honest, a little bit of a weird weekend. A little bit of a weird weekend.
A weird what?
A weird weekend. It's a weird.
Yeah, it's all that.
Yeah. It was a weird weekend. It was Easter Sunday. We had 2 days off, which was like wild.
Yes, because we've been working every day since this started. Maybe before this started.
But we got so bored, or at least I did, that our brother Dan and I had a battle, the way that BGG Premier and RZA had a battle, or
Jonte Austin and Neo, or Swiss Beats and Timbaland.
Yeah, just like all these big names had battles.
Yeah, you battled Dan.
I battled Dan. He was using the production of Jazzy Faye.
Yeah.
And I was countering him with songs by Kool & Dre.
Okay, so Dan was playing songs by Jazzy Faye. You were playing songs by Kool & Dre.
On FaceTime.
On FaceTime.
So, yeah. So nobody could even see.
You didn't share it with anybody.
No.
And who judged it?
You.
Okay, great. So it was
from 6 feet away.
It was just the two of you.
Yeah.
And then me.
Mm-hmm.
No one else.
No, but the internet loved it. I tweeted about it.
I know you did.
Like, this is crazy.
And when you tweeted about it, Jamal Jamo FaceTimed me.
Yeah.
Because he felt he was missing out.
Which he was.
And so then I caught him up by moving the phone over.
Yeah.
How was the battle, Jeff?
It was crazy.
How was the sound?
Yeah, the sound was actually really
top
good.
Top notch.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I think you're not asking the real questions, which were, what was I wearing?
Oh, what were you wearing, Jeff?
I was wearing a leather vest and leather gloves because I was dressed for battle.
Sunglasses?
Black sunglasses.
Yeah, sure.
Ready for war.
You had Kool & Dre.
Mm-hmm.
Dan had Jazzy Faye.
Mm-hmm.
I called it for you.
Yes.
I called it for Kool & Dre.
Well, I mean, there was a strategy there, and I feel like you're discounting that.
I think that you you chose the perfect list of songs.
Yeah, thank you.
I think you chose the perfect order of the songs.
So these are all things that I did right.
Yeah.
Kool & Dre did probably the least amount of work.
But I do want to shout out Dan because he had a very, very good set list.
Mm-hmm.
And a good order and a good, you know, way to go about things.
Yep. He ended with Murphy Lee.
But it's but it's hard to beat the five songs that you chose on behalf of Kool & Dre. But I want to listen. It's for the culture. I want to salute both of you for what you did. Jeff, speaking of culture, who's on the podcast today?
We have Fabolous.
Fabolous, who we've been trying to get on the podcast for a long time.
Well, to the point that Fab came up to us at Barclays and was like, yo, when am I getting on the podcast? And we were like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Like,
let's make it happen.
Yeah.
And then we had to make it a 20-minute conversation via...
On the phone.
Yeah, the
during
phone.
During quarantine.
But you know,
it's fine.
It's great. It's a great conversation. Maybe we'll do it again with him.
Yeah.
Rules. We are looking forward to sitting down with him for a long podcast. Great conversation with Fab.
Yes. And we got Tanisha Scott on the podcast.
Another person that we've been trying to get on the podcast.
This one is like a dream. Actually, think about all three people.
Yep. Yeah, we've been
These are all people that we've been like working on getting.
Tanisha Scott, the legendary choreographer, dancer. She's worked with everyone from Sean Paul to Drake and everyone in between.
Yep.
And she's just an amazing, amazing soul. And I'm so glad that we got this phone conversation.
Yes.
And then
we had Jerry Lorenzo.
Jerry Lorenzo, Fear of God, the big time clothing designer out there in Los Angeles, California.
Mm-hmm.
We were supposed to be in LA for a month straight.
Yeah, right now.
We were going to get a lot of stuff done out there. It was going to be basically 3.5 weeks out there, just like killer interviews, and Jerry was going to be one of them. This is a great conversation with him about creatives and creativity and moods and what comes out of all of this.
Yeah.
But
I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
We, you know, every episode I'm just like, oh, like I really like this one the best.
Yeah.
I think this one is my favorite.
This is a great full spectrum.
Yeah.
With three awesome creatives and us.
Yep.
Jeff, let's get on the phone.
Wait, before that, we should just say, if you want to support us, because we're putting out new episodes every single day, and we're doing this for you for free, maybe it doesn't have to be for free. Maybe you can go to patreon.com/itsthereal.
Yeah.
Help our cause out.
Yeah, you can give as little as like $2 or $3. There are people who have given more, like $10 and even more.
We're so close to our 100th contributor.
That would be fantastic. Shout out to everybody who has been part of this movement. It means the world to us. Thank you for, you know, riding along with us. I know you probably didn't anticipate us doing a daily podcast.
Neither did we.
But here we are,
yeah,
and here you are, patreon.com/itsthereal. Thank you to all the contributors.
Yes, I'd shout you out by name, but my phone is currently filming us.
We're on youtube.com/itsthereal. Jeff, yeah. Now, let's call
Fabulous.
Fab, what up?
What's good, my guys? What's going on?
What's happening? How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually just chilling and yeah, I'm just chilling.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can
do. That's all you can do. Fab, we saw you the other day say on Twitter you really missed getting dressed up. You have so many outfits. You have killed...
No, I didn't say dressed up. I said getting dressed.
Oh,
no. I miss getting dressed. It's like the actual bullshit of going to your closet and picking out your shoes and your outfit and actually just get dressed. So, not dressed up, not like going to Rihanna's ball, or no. Like, you know, going to the Grammys, or like, you know, I'm talking about like literally getting, you know, matching your sneakers with your outfit.
No, for sure, because for the last couple of years, you've been killing Instagram with all of these like thematic choices. You've been pulling out like throwbacks that haven't been worn like forever. There have been like amazing Instagram
moments. Yeah,
you have.
I've had my Instagram model, job. I fulfill my duties as an Instagram model.
Here's something we've been curious for a long time. When Jay said that throwbacks were done and we were just going to do like button ups, were you like, were you like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I have a whole closet. I have closets.
I mean, no, I got where what it meant for Jay.
Yeah, but like, Jonas, you know, you have a
turn it down. Sorry, I got a 4-year-old in. Turn it down. Yeah, I get what it meant for Jay, you know, and Jay has always been, you know, somebody who has been innovative and somebody who, when he moved forward in something, he, you know, shares it with the world, you know what I'm saying? So for me, you know, I took that message like, okay, Jay's over wearing throwbacks, but I think even too for the rest of the world, you know what I mean? People still gonna wear what they like, what they find cool. I did think that after a while it did get saturated to a point, but that's just like everything. Like, you know, hip hop kinda does that to, you know, trends or whatever's cool at the moment. So, you know, for Jay doing it, I got why he did it, but you know what I mean, it's still the rest of the world. Everybody's not Jay-Z. You know?
Yeah.
Everybody's not Jay-Z. That's very true. Everybody obviously is under quarantine
don't make
right
that,
now.
Don't make that the title of this.
No.
I'm just going to make t-shirts.
Like, yeah.
You know, I like a little lot.
Fab says everybody's not like, Jay-Z.
Yeah. The real interviews, Fab, and the headline is everybody's not Jay-Z.
Never that.
Right. So everybody is under quarantine right now. There were a bunch of like tweets flying around in the very beginning of it that was like, oh, I can't wait for rappers to start rapping about coronavirus. And my feeling was that if you were near a studio, you would be the first one to put coronavirus in a rhyme. Do you think that, do you feel the same way?
I do feel the same way because I think one thing about talking, rapping and expressing yourself is, you know, speaking on what you're going through and what, you know, it's relatable to people, and coronavirus and quarantine is definitely relatable right now. There's certain people who make music in that lane, and then there's certain people who just make, you know, they'll be in quarantine and they'll be making music about going to the club and shit like that. You know what I mean? Where, you know, sometimes people do want to hear that. Some people want to hear what's going on. Some people want to lose their self in music. So I don't think it's wrong or right. I think, like you said, I would have been one of the guys that would have, you know, been able to try to find a creative way or funny way to, you know, put it in a rap and people to enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? So I definitely had my share of social moments or social events and current events that I put in rap. So I know where I get that rap from. I don't put everything as much now. You know what I really, when I really use it more is in like freestyle, because I feel like those are, you know, at the time kind of like current, you know, like, you know, you speaking in that time.
For sure.
When you make a song sometime, it could come out 3-4 months later and then it's the coronavirus bar next year might not be as, yeah, you know, relevant.
Because then you're like, well, you know, what's a BBM pose? You know, like.
Yeah, yeah. No, like, yeah. It relates just like that.
Fab, growing up, you were an excellent artist, not just in the musical sense, but you could really draw. Do you see that in your children now? And what else do you recognize, like, from you in them?
I see my 4-year-old drawing. I see him getting engaged in that. I don't know if I don't have a good memory of when I was 4 years old, so I can't remember if I was really drawing when I was little. But you're going to make me ask my mom. But I think I see a lot of things that they do, but of course now they have a lot more technology. So, you know, the iPads and, you know, all of the apps and stuff is stuff that they're swinging through. But my 12-year-old, I got a 4-year-old and a 12-year-old, and my 12-year-old, he's into video games like I was when he was young. But on the art side, I see my 4-year-old tapping into art more than I see my 12-year-old. And I think when you have more than one kid, you see different things that one picks up on and stuff that the other picks up on. And I think, you know, that's what makes them unique. You know what I mean? And I think now, as being a dad and with kids, I would push them. Whatever I don't want to give them a profession. I think, like, back in the days, parents used to be like, you know, you're going to be a doctor or you're going to be a lawyer or, you know, and that's what they kind of pushed you to be or instilled in you to be. But I think now you can, you know, let kids like see what they like, see what they want to be if they have that opportunity and chase after that, and you push them forward to that, or give them as many opportunities as you can to let them be what they want to be.
Yeah.
I saw you talking to Elliot the other day on their live stream, and you were talking about how you were starting to learn how to engineer at home for the first time, like, ever. So I want to know, what's the hardest thing about learning to engineer 20-some-odd years into a career?
Truthfully, for me, I mean, the technical part was a little tricky because you just got to get comfortable there, but the real comfort issue with me was, like, having the cadence of, you know, recording yourself, but then still being your cadence of the way you rap,
yeah,
and still, you know what I mean? It's,
yeah,
it's just that combination that's just like throwing me off a little bit. And I just, you know, I just keep practicing at it to get comfortable. I know over time, and like anything, you practice it and do it over and over, you get a little better at it.
Is there any chance that you'll get your 12-year-old or your 4-year-old maybe to engineer for you?
Yeah, press the space bar.
Yeah.
Definitely not the 4-year-old. Definitely not the 4-year-old. I would love, you know, even after I learn it and get it, I'm not even skilled enough to teach somebody. It would be like a blind leading the blind. So I would wait till I get it down packed a little bit more and then try to get like my 12-year-old. I don't think it's that hard for him, and plus he catches on the technology really fast. So, like, you know what I mean? If you show him the ropes, I believe he could catch on to it.
Fab, you know how close we are with the Locks. We've been up to D-Block Studios, the old D-Block Studios that they just closed down like a couple months ago, so many times. And
oh, wow. I didn't even know they closed that one.
Yeah, they're
moving to a new place.
And our favorite thing about it is how, like,
unassuming it is.
Yeah, it's like this, like, warehouse amongst warehouses, and you have to walk up 3 flights, and it's next to all these, like, woodworking shops.
Did they have a fire there?
No, not that we knew. They had a ghost, but... and so we always found it so funny, and so we would ask them, we were like, yo, what do, like, you know, rappers who come up here to collaborate think? And they said, like, you know, Ross would show up fine. You would show up fine. There have been people who, like, thought it was the wrong place, like, walked up and were like, no, that, you know, they're playing a joke on me, something. What was your experience when you first went over there?
Well, I first went there when we were working on a Freddie versus Jason project, and I was just like, well, Kiss is taking this little Jason grunge setting is a little too far. Like, I felt like it was really, like, it was really, but it was real, like,
it was haunted,
nostalgic and hip-hop at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it wasn't, like, you know, you going into one of those plush studios, and it was something that you felt like you came in, and you came here to get your true feelings and emotions across rather than being, like, swayed into what you're doing. You know what I mean? Everybody loves, you know, nice establishments, nice hotels, nice studios, whatever. But, you know, sometimes you also got to tap back into where it started and what get that organic, genuine energy. And I think that's what D-Block Studio always provided for me, too. Like, you know what I mean? I went up there. I had no problem. Like you said, I went in there, I sat in, I you know, this is, it also reminded me of times when I first started, the kind of studios that I would go into, or, like, you know, that feeling that of, you know, the giving me that energy. So I even appreciated that. I appreciated, like, it making me feel, you know, like I'm not fabulous. The you know, superstar rapper for the moment. I like just taking me back to being a writer and organically, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that actually, like, reminds me of when you were really young and you got called up to Hot 97 to spit for Clue. And you told this story, I think it was either with Knuckleheads or with Nori, I don't remember. But you were talking about when you went to school the next day and some girl came up to you and was like, yo, I heard this verse on Hot 97 yesterday. And you're like, that was me.
Yeah.
That's so wild.
Yeah, that was like my first, I always say that was like my first fan, because, like, they kind of knew the rap and knew, you know, knew the show, knew everything, but just didn't know who, didn't know it was me, you know what I'm saying? So it was crazy to me that it showed me the dynamic of how, you know, you could spread as well, too. You know, this was somebody I saw in school every day, and now I came to school this day, and, you know, what I had did last night has spread it to her, and now she's like, wait a minute, now she's looking at me as a different person than she's been looking at me for the whole school year, you know what I'm saying? So it showed me the dynamic of, you know, you doing your thing and people recognizing it, and now recognizing who you are for what you did, you know what I'm saying? So you know, and it wasn't in, like, a groupie, like,
no,
you know what I mean?
Course,
it was just somebody, like, you know, they didn't know who that person was. It was, you know what I mean? So that's the difference in, like, you know what I mean? What I'm saying, it's not like a groupie thing. It was like, yo, this person, it was like somebody organically, like, feeling or loving what you do without you having, you know what I mean? But you still have being anonymous to them, like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Another one of our favorite things that just never gets brought up anymore, and it just shocks us because it was such a, like, a crazy one of one moment, was when, and you first signed to, you know, you were on Elektra, and then you got upstream to Atlantic, but then you got traded to Def Jam for Music Soul Child, and no one ever brings that up anymore. How did you find out about that, and what do you think about that looking back?
First, to include in that story, I was on an Interscope first.
Oh,
I don't
true,
even think
true.
Anybody kind of, like, adds that to the story, but I was on Interscope, and then Clue was working at Interscope at the time, and then Clue, want to say he got fired. I don't want to badmouth him, but I think he got fired. And I got put in a position where it was like, either you stay here at Interscope, or you can leave with Clue. And I think at that point, even though getting a record deal, like, you know, that was kind of like the goal, you know what I mean? If you're a rapper, especially in that time, you know, to get in your first record deal. But I chose to walk away from the deal just because I felt like my loyalty was owed to Clue, who brought me in there.
Yeah.
And two, I didn't know who I would be left there with. And I could stay there and then end up being in a bad position, and you know what I mean. I just thought, you know, maybe going with Clue and continuing what we were already doing, and we could find another situation rather than stay there at Interscope with some people that, you know, are not really invested that much in me and might even look at me as a liability because I'm from a, you know, somebody else who was there. So I went with Clue, like you said. I went to Elektra. We ended up getting a new deal at Elektra. Then that merged into Atlantic and Warner. And then my thing with Atlantic, and shout out all the people who were there at the time, Julie Greenwald, Craig Kaumann, Leo Cohen, you know, all of those guys are, you know, kind of like record exec legends on that note, Kevin Lyle. But I just felt like I felt the same thing I was saying about Interscope, where I would have been at some place that wasn't home for me. Like I was, I kind of was like merged there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like they didn't originally sign me. The people who signed me, Sylvia Rowan signed me, and she wasn't at Atlantic. She wasn't, you know what I mean? The people who are excited about you and happy to have you as a family, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't walking in chairs and they were screaming Norm over there. It was just like, you know, I walk in the building and it was like, oh, he's here. You know what I mean? And it just didn't feel. And I think I put out a project there. I think I put out Real Talk while I was there.
Yeah.
And that's when we had Breathe. And, Breathe even kind of, the funny story behind Breathe, it was like supposed to be like your street. And that time too, they had like this single where it was like A side and B side. I guess that stems from records.
Records,
A side is your main single, and then the B side it was just something that was so. Free was supposed to be released as like the B side, kind of like street mix show, whatever you title that record as, and it just kind of exploded into. They didn't really believe in the record because they were also used to me making like Can't Let You Go, Go Into You,
R&B smooth records,
Trade It All, all those like hit radio records to them, and I wanted to kind of go against that for this project because I felt like I was just going so far that way, that I was getting away from
who you really were,
of me as an MC. And so they gave me Breathe, but they gave it to me in a smaller thing where it's going to be a B-side. We're going to throw it out, just to show love, let you shoot a video for it, a cheap video, and blah, 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 blah. And it actually just turned up, and people liked it, and people liked the video, and, you know, the energy, I think, of, you know, from me having the hit records and going into that, I think that also helped it as well. And that's when, you know, that's when I kind of realized that they didn't really see eye to eye to me a little bit there. Because even after that hit, they still were like, well, we're going to go back to the radio stuff now. We want to go back to your, you know, girl, because that's your base. And we did that too. But it just still felt like a little funny over there. And I think I just started feeling the resistance. And I think I've said it before, I think that's like kind of the era too where a lot of the South music started like really, really, really becoming mainstream.
Yeah, Lil Jon, Twins,
you know, Trick Daddy, all of that. So I felt like their attention was more into that wave because it was new. It definitely was new to a bunch of New York record execs, you know what I'm saying?
And they had Trick over there, and
also
Trina.
They had Trick, they had T.I.,
Trina,
you know what I mean? So they were Trina, they had a few acts that they, and that sound was just more like booming and new to them and fresh. And like, you know, I remember Little John was the first record I might have heard playing in New York, and I'm like, wow, I was like, wow, because we just hear this region alone in that time was very isolated, you know what I mean? So I just think that's when I started really feeling that too, you know what I'm saying? I think 05, 06, I really started seeing the merge of that and more of like South and trap music becoming more mainstream. And I felt like as a company, they were shifting there too, you know what I'm saying? So it just kind of threw me off a little bit at the company. And then this, I guess people knew, you know, internally, like, you know, people that I was working with, my management, my Desert Storm team of Clue and them. And I think Jay-Z ended up being at Def Jam.
Yeah.
Okay. They started being at they, and I think that's where the idea came from. And I think music was, I think music was disgruntled about his being at Def Jam at that time too. And I think somehow they pulled off this, you know, similar to an NBA trade
yeah.
of some sort. Well, we give you Fab and y'all take Music Soul Child. I mean, it wasn't based on our deals or money or anything like that. It was just more kind of like a swap out of artists who where, you know, he doesn't want to be here and he doesn't want to be here.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we could give them new situations. And
I just wish there was like
a situation was cool for me because of L.A. Reid and Jay-Z.
Yeah.
With people that I went in and sat in and talked to. Jay-Z, I kind of knew from, you know, outside of that. And it just worked from there. It's like you said, it's kind of under the table now, but it's at that time, it definitely was something that I had never heard of, and I still haven't really heard too many, like, situations like that.
Yeah, I just wish there was, like, an Adrian Wojnarowski there to sort of, like, you know, drop a bomb and announce it.
Or even like a Raymond Felton like game, like just like thrown in.
Yeah. One last question before we let you go, Fab, which is that our friend Lenny S, for your birthday last
two years ago,
you guys were traveling, and
I think you were in Dubai.
Yeah. Every day for about like a week or maybe a week and a half. Not just for your birthday.
It wasn't a week. It was like 3 days. It was like 3 days. Like, can you imagine getting like 15 cakes in 3 days? Like, it might have been 2 days. No, it probably was 3 days.
Yo, they kept celebrating your birthday.
Everywhere I was going. Like, I was walking in like Dolce & Gabbana, and it was like, happy birthday. I was like, nah.
The best
was.
But
it definitely was a fun moment. And that was like a cool, you know what I mean? At the first one or two or three, I was just like, it was cool. And then by the time we got to like 6, 7, I was like, oh, nah, this is kind of crazy. I'm like, yo, they like, you want a slice? I'm like, no, I don't want a slice. I ate 7 slices of cake today. I don't want a slice. You know what I mean? I felt bad telling them like, yo, we're not eating that. But you know what I mean? It gets crazy. We were like, it was. By 10, 11, I'm like, yo, this is nuts now. Like, you know what I mean? And then you go into, like, different establishments, so they're having, like, different cakes. You go to the Jamaican spot, they got a rum cake for you. You go to the Spanish spot, they got, like, tres leche. Like, you know what I mean? It was out of control, but it was my birthday, man, and it was a lot of love. And,
that was great.
And, you know, Dubai showed me a lot of love for my birthday.
One very last question. A million years ago, you came up to us at a Fool's Gold Day Off concert, and you wanted to talk about Narcos.
Yeah.
And, like, by the way, we didn't know you. I mean, we knew you, but, like, we didn't know that you knew us. And so all we talked about was Narcos. Mm-hmm. We're under quarantine right now. What are you watching to pass the time?
Oh, man, I think I've watched the whole Netflix. Now I'm on Hulu, like, you know what I mean, trying to finish Hulu. But I've watched so many things. I watched a lot of Netflix shows, from the Madam C.J. Walker to the new Narcos. It was a season 3 Narcos. My favorite that I just finished was Ozark.
Ozark was nuts.
Crazy.
Was really good. That show was like anxiety on steroids, and it's just like... But it's like a never way out. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like one of the things you keep rooting for them to get out of, and they keep making the smart moves or the right move. And it's like the right move is never the move. It's like it's always another move.
Yeah, just going deeper and deeper in.
Yeah, it's like playing chess with the cartel. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's really crazy.
Fucked
up. But those shows are great. I've been watching... right now, I just started watching some show called Little Fires Everywhere.
Oh, that's supposed to be
Kerry
good.
Washington. Yeah, so far it's been cool. I've been watching also, there's a series that I'm watching. I think in quarantine it makes it a little harder, but I ain't really got nowhere to go anyway. But 50's show, the For Life show, I like that show a lot too. It's like a sitcom on ABC.
Oh, ABC, yeah, yeah.
And I think 50's behind it, so that's been pretty good too. So,
right on.
Listen, yeah, I've just been catching everything, man, and you know, trying to spread the time out between watching shows, taking booking, play with the kids. It's just a groundhog day.
That's it.
But that lasting for like 2 weeks right now. So
yeah, man. Well, listen, Fab, we love you. Take care of you and yours. Stay safe. Stay inside. Stay creative, and we'll be checking in on you. All right.
All right, man. Jonah, say bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thanks, Fab. Right.
Hi.
Jeff, let's get on the phone with Tanisha Scott.
Hello.
Hey. Tanisha.
Hi.
How are you?
You know what? I'm actually doing really good.
Love hearing that.
Like, I know, right? Like, ironically, really pretty awesome. Yeah. This is like... You know, obviously the worst times for everybody. Like, who can imagine this would happen to us?
For sure.
But in retrospect, for the type of job that I have, I actually don't have to think. And it's been great.
That's the best thing to hear.
I know.
Also, like, are you able to just, like, you know, you are a professional dancer by trade. Are you able to just, like, dance with nobody watching?
Totally. And I do that all the time. But this time it's just literally for me. Like, I've been cooking more because I have to. And I also loved it. And I play music. Like, I go through, like, if it's like an IG live from the other day of D-Night or my friend starting from scratch, or I'll just, you know, the verses has been really good.
Yep.
And if I miss it, then I'll listen to it while making like breakfast, and then like a song I'd hear would inspire me. Then I'll go to Spotify and literally go to This Is. Like last night, yesterday, I did Wu-Tang and Method Man.
Yeah.
And I did This Is Method Man. I was just going through all these shots. And I was like, oh shit, I forgot about this song. So,
Can I just say, by the way, so we've been trying to get Tanisha on our podcast, Waste of Time with It's the Real, for the better part of 2 years, I want to say. And shout out to our friends, Director X, shout out to Kareem Johnson, shout out to Marcia St. Hubert, shout out to Ashley Kalmanowitz, just a long list of people who have advocated on our behalf. And it only took a pandemic to get Tanisha on the podcast. But I do want to say, having never met you in person, and hopefully we will after this is all over, your energy is just
the best.
Outstanding.
Oh, thank you.
You are.
Thanks.
You know, because these are heavy times, and to have, you know, a bright light there is helpful to all of us and all of our listeners out there. So shout out to you for that. I want to talk about Toronto. And a lot of people know Toronto now for Drake and The Weeknd and Tory Lanez and the whole thing. But can we talk about when you were growing up in Toronto and what that energy was like for you?
Hell yeah. So growing up, and it's so cool because right now I'm in Toronto. I left New York about 2 weeks ago.
Right on.
And I'm here. And it's like I'm reconnecting with home in a way. And for me, when I was growing up, Toronto was literally like, it's a mecca of just information and knowledge about culture, period. Mm-hmm. My best friend's Italian, my other best friend is Greek, and my other best friend is from the Philippines. And then, of course, my family's Jamaican.
Yep.
And so it's like, my godmother's Italian. So I grew up learning and loving so many things about different cultures just automatically from the day I was pretty much born. Mm. So when I go out and do different things, like I've been to several bar mitzvahs. I've been to like, this doesn't even talk about like the club. Going to the club, when you go out at night, you're hearing every single genre of music out. Mm. Like there's, you know, you have the dance hall, of course, then you have the reggae, and then you have the hip hop, and you have the R&B, and then you have the pop, and then you have the rock, and then you have even sometimes like a little bit of country, you know? So like it growing up in Toronto, I was also an athlete too. So I ran a lot. I ran track in the club. So outside of high school and university, I took it to university. Wow. But yeah, I was an athlete first, and it was in university that I found dance. I grew up with my dad, who was a DJ by like that was his heart, his hobby, his ambition.
Super dope.
But he's like, okay, but I had to go to work and, you know, pay bills and stuff like that. Like that reality wasn't a real reality leaving Jamaica. But so we'll have like parties all the time. My house, like my garage right now, is filled with vinyl. I have a couple DJ friends who like will come to the house, and I've gifted some. My dad's gifted them some. I have an 8-track in my garage at my mom's house.
Wait, does it
work?
I
was like, what is this? I have no idea. I haven't touched it. I haven't seen it. But I remember growing up, my dad said that he got that from his dad, and I don't think he's ever used it either, my father, but like music was the essence in our household.
Was your father anything like the father in the Get Busy video?
No, he was the complete opposite. we had a party house, because he'd have like basement parties. Well, we did have those basement parties. Mm. That's another thing about growing up in Toronto too. Everybody, if you lived in an apartment building, not, but the majority of people had basements, and we had those basement parties.
Love it.
So we had them a lot. I remember dancing with my shadow a lot with my sister as my dancing partner and stuff. Watching like old Soul Train shows and getting CDs with my dad. Yeah, it was fun as hell, but funny enough, it was funny in the house where my dad was all about music. You know, of course, education and, you know, running was my thing. That was hopefully my ticket.
Yeah, what was your race?
So, I was me and my short, thick ass legs. I was a power runner, so I did all short distances. So I did the 100 meter, 200, by the 150, of course, I hit a wall because I was really fast out of the block.
Yeah.
Relay, obviously, I was always a starter because I had an amazing start.
I was just going to ask. So you don't have a chance to like drop the baton necessarily?
No, never. Thank God. But I started the pace with that. One thing I do remember, and I always pat myself on the back, that I've never lost coming out of the blocks in any race that I ever did.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think it's so funny when you look back and you become like really introspective and deep, and you get old and you're like, maybe that's why I love music so much, because I hear, or maybe that came from music. I hear, my dad used to let me hear different sounds and explain to me different instruments in certain songs, because like songs back then, and when I say back then, I'm like, my dad used to play, of course, lots of, like, you think of like Bob Marley or Prince or Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. or really, my dad was a big fan of Quincy Jones.
Wow.
And you listen to these old records, and it's like, of course, you have the music, you know, you have a proper layer of music, and you have your artist singing, but then there's always this like extended part where everyone has like a solo within the track, you know? So he'd explain to me different instruments and whatnot. Like, you know, you had intros and outros in the middle section. So it wasn't just like verse, chorus, bridge, chorus.
Yeah.
Like there's also the same thing for the music too, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I may be losing my mind thinking like that helped me.
We're all
hear,
losing our
like,
minds.
The gun.
This is a very weird time. Tanisha,
yeah.
When you and X and Sean Paul got together and you had that just like Hall of Fame run together, did you understand, even at the earliest videos, did you understand what you were doing for culture and for the world? And did you have any sense that it would like, you know, make its way down outside of New York City and, you know, change the idea of like what these two Jewish brothers might have, you know, thought a music video would be?
Yeah. Did it feel big to you at the time?
Yeah. No, not at all. Because honestly, I thought I was doing bigger things in the States. So I, you know, through like X helped me out so much, and put me on the map when it came to like doing music videos. So he's like, listen, I'm here in New York, you know, and he's working with Hype Williams. And then when he started doing music videos out there through his, through Taj, and I was just like, okay, well, Taj is the one who introduced me to X first. Mm-hmm. And then through that connection, I started flying out to the States and I did like, I'll be that for X and just being like a girl in the video.
Yeah.
So like the video girl, but not the one that everyone is like panting over and whatnot. I wasn't the girl beside the artist, but right, I was always the girl in the shot that needed some energy with dancing.
Yep.
So I was the dancing girl in that. So I was like, yeah, doing my thing and going back to university, coming back to Windsor, and then, you know, working. And then I started my career like just dancing for artists. But I had to come back because when X is like, yo, got the Sean Paul music video, we're doing it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm gonna come down and dance. He's like, yeah, nah, I think I want you to choreograph it. There needs to be choreography in it, not just you dancing. And I was like, but I can't choreograph. He's like, well, you're gonna have to, he was like, well, you're gonna have to figure it out. I was like, okay. So at that point in time, I guess I have to figure it out. Came out here and figured it out. It was a song, and he says this all the time, like the song had already been out for a long time, so I was familiar with it. And I literally was like, let me just freestyle. And through freestyling, I just was like, okay, this move is cool, that move's cool. Got a couple of my friends together and then a couple of the dance crews. That's what we used because I didn't know dancers. We knew dance crews. I was a part of Do That, and he had Dancy Crime, and he had other crews that were in the music video. Cause like, you guys do this and do that, and we'll put them in different. And we had one rehearsal. And jeez. After that, it was literally just a group of friends, it felt like, on set, putting this together, X being as brilliant as he is and saying, okay, we need to make it look like this and keep people here and then get me the dancers over here. And it was amazing. And then working, meeting Sean for the first time and just telling him, okay, well, this is how you're going to move because you got to, X wants you to look like you're walking through like a dark tunnel. You're not sure where you're going to end up or going. So while he was on the fixture, the lighted fixture, lit fixture, I was in front of him on the ground in the darkness, like walking and mimicking like the moves that he could possibly use and like how he's walking and stuff. So that, and the other thing is at that point I had just gotten a dance agent. And my dance agent was like, no, you can't go back and do that music video. You got to stay here because you possibly may do another job, like making real money and blah, blah, blah. Whoa. And so I left and did not even tell anybody I did that music video until it became so popular. My agent was like, was that you in that video? And I told him, and he was like, good job.
Yo.
Good job.
How about taking that chance and like changing the trajectory of your life and like knowing that it would have cost you money and you just felt it in your gut?
I know, literally, like it definitely completely 360'd everything and pioneered to where I am today because I don't even dance that much. But now, you know, doing choreography, I never even thought about choreography. It was no way, nowhere, shape, or form in, not even my frontal lobe. It was nowhere in my head. All I wanted to do was just dance. Mm. And to trust, to have X trust in me, and to me, just to say, okay, well, I'm just going to just figure it out. And obviously, it's Sean Paul, it's dance hall. I'm like, I know how to do this because this is how I've been moving since I was born. Like, this won't be hard. So I'm like, I'm just gonna, I can figure this out. You know, I was scared shitless, but you know, once we got, like, once I was in the rehearsal studio, I'm like, oh man, y'all, let's just do this, let's just do that, blah, 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 and feel this way. And it just started to come out and it started feeling familiar. Mm. And again, I don't think, and I don't know if X knew, but I don't think anyone thought that this was going to go anywhere. Because at that time, you know, reggae music and dancehall music, sorry, was starting to come back, but not even. So it was like, oh, we're never going to see this on like MTV or anything in the States. So this literally was just a passionate project that I was like, let me try this new thing. But it was just straight out of passion. There was nothing about it that gave me the stress of, oh, well, the moves aren't right.
That's awesome.
Well, but moving forward, though, so, you know, you're talking mm-hmm. about how your business has been great. Are artists still shooting videos right now? Like, what is going on in the music production world, music video production world right now for you?
I've gotten, it's definitely shut down. Like, I can tell you, my next job literally is in October, and that is Coachella.
Wow.
That if it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, what I've been getting a lot is I've been talking to some of my artists just about, we're brainstorming down with what can we do when we come back. Now I'm having my one-on-one conversations with them about, like, okay, well, this could be cool and that could be cool. And it's really just sitting down and having a time to breathe and map things out. But then there's also the aspect of, okay, how do we make a music video? We want to promote this song. How do we promote it? But then at the same time, not seem like we're not sensitive to what's happening right now, you know, because they still want to keep things going. So it's interesting. Everyone is, I won't say there's a complete halt, but there is like an 80%, like our arms and our legs are tied behind our back. How do we physically make these things happen? We're not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do the worm.
Everyone's brain is going. Yeah. Yes,
if your arms
yes.
and legs are tied behind your back, you can do the worm.
Right.
My feeling is, I mean, so we just watched SNL do a Zoom basically version, an SNL at home for this weekend. And I think that the industry, TV and music videos, will adapt, but it's going to take some very weird forms to get there.
Yes.
You know, whether, yes. you know, have you been using Zoom to keep in touch with people? And like, is that a source of inspiration for things moving forward?
Absolutely. It has been. And yes, I have been using Zoom. I've been using this thing called House Party, mm-hmm. WhatsApp,
yep.
Quite a few things. But interestingly enough, you know, when I said that, I feel like our legs and our arms are tied behind our back in terms of the traditional way of, say, shooting a music video or doing a live concert. You know, the physical way of doing it is not the same, where yeah. you have a DP, where you have a studio and whatnot. So it's just rethinking these things. Yeah. Now, I'm actually working just as a passion project. It's myself, Karina Evans, and my creative producer partner, Natalie. I want to do something with the dance. I want to do something with dance and utilizing not just Zoom, but either people, and we're still figuring this out, people recording themselves. I teach everyone a routine, but I want to do it based off of formations. Hmm. And formations and using graphics, like some of my graphic designers and trying to figure out. So we're like brainstorming and workshop. I'm talking to a group of people that I work with animation and stuff. So sweetheart, I don't know how this is going to work out, but I'm working on that currently, trying to just, want to, you know, do something for all of us just creatives, you know.
Well, I think that there's a couple of things. I mean, like, you were just talking about how the versus battles, you know, have been such a cultural moment, and if there's some way to capture that sort of energy, maybe not in the same sort of medium, but like to put it elsewhere, yeah. and to make it this collective good, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, because, you know, we talk about this a lot of you know, we've spoken about it a lot recently, and especially a lot with creatives, both on the podcast and off, because it's a huge concern to keep not only culture alive, but also community alive, because you're taking away venues and you're taking away like interconnectivity
and experiences and everything.
And how do you grow culture from that? And I think that it's been interesting to see what TikTok has done, because that does allow people to still like take something, make it their own, and keep it going. But but what you're describing through animation and through, you know, tapping other people, even through a screen, is pretty dynamic.
Yeah, I hope it turns out that way, guys. No, I'm just joking. But there's definitely things are moving toward more technology. You know, even in these stage shows, when I'm looking at just people's concerts. You know, there's a lot of technology being used to make things look cool. And it's kind of like, I love Vegas, right? And Vegas has, I think, a strong hold on a live, beautiful, polished play where it's not too much of one thing when you go to like Cirque du Soleil or if you go see J-Lo or whatnot. But I see these tours are, you know, from it, be it lasers to video content and then how people interact with them. Like I see a lot of that happening with less dancing.
Yeah.
And I want to keep, I want to be innovative and keep with what's happening, but I also don't want to lose the essence of the human part of it. Like I don't care how many zip lines and animation can look like it's jumping from one place to the next and it looks like you're in the midst of it. There's nothing that beats when you have an army of dancers up there with an artist or a group, and when they get down and then they do a stop and now everyone just feels that.
Yeah. Oh,
that's amazing. I don't want to lose that. So I'm trying to find a way to visually mash the both of them.
Yeah.
So,
I have one idea. Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Okay.
Yes.
Could you battle DJ Premier in dance?
You know, I thought about that too. I was like, how do choreographers and dancers, of course they battle all the time, but I'm like, what's a cool way for that to happen? Yeah. And then I thought about, okay, even like music video directors, like do we do Benny Boom versus Lil X and they just show like their top music videos, or, you know, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking different listen, things. I'm saying it can happen, but
we vote yes. I don't know if that, you know, matters, but we vote yes. Tanisha, when you're talking about New Toronto, when you're talking about Drake, and you talk about like something like Hotline Bling, which, you know, again, brings you and X together and creates a moment that changes music videos and it changes culture and it changes the world. That was done with such a different technique, and it's done at a different time. What was your response when the video was filmed? And then what was your response when it went out to the world and became these smaller moments and memes that took on a whole new meaning?
Well, shooting the video is just being on set and seeing the set in itself was like larger than life. Seeing the motion of the colors blending and bleeding through each other was so beautiful. So it was just like walking into an art exhibit. And, you know, when X would just have Drake just sitting on the steps or just in the box, I'm like, this is so beautiful. Now, you had to dance to it. And of course, he himself being just Drake is just always 10 steps ahead. Like he knew this was going to happen. He was like, oh yeah, people are going to try to get me for that. Oh yeah, I already know. But we thought it was, let me just speak for myself, sorry. I thought that, okay, this is just going to be a really, really cool video.
Mm.
But what happened? I was like, what the fuck? I had no idea that was going to happen. None. And I'm always shocked. And I think it's a good thing for me to stay that way, because anytime I don't want to put too much pressure and too much overthinking. We start to overthink things, and like, we got to make a hot track, or sorry, I'll speak in my world. Yeah, I have to make the hottest dance. It has to be the best routine.
Right.
I got to make a dance to make sure that this song goes viral. That shit never fucking works. Oh, sorry, can I swear? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
God, Tanisha, okay. This is a Christian podcast.
Yesterday was Easter Sunday. Oh, Lord, bless me. Yeah, to me, that shit never works. Like, art is art, and when you can't put, like, you can't overthink things that come from within you. You know, it's a way to just express yourself. So you got to tap in to like emotion and experience and your knowledge. So we weren't trying to. Well, I wasn't trying to make like a masterful of this is the new. I don't know, Michael Jackson Thriller. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, no, this is just fun. It felt good. Everything was right. These are the dances that he wants to do. This is what the choreography is going to look like. This is the moment. So then we were completely authentically ourselves at that shoot and not thinking about what's going to work for the outside, because it was nothing like what has already been done.
Nothing.
So there was no, right. There was no template to like, okay, make sure we check off these boxes. We got to have five girls, not six, but five. And then Drake, you got to wear this. And then Drake got to move like that. And then we need to have this. Nah, it was like, let's go. Let's just feel go and do what makes sense.
So it's and like, it it's like so improv nice. In a sense.
Yes. Yes.
That's
absolutely
dope.
on my end, abso-freaking-lutely. But then there's also a magic that just happens with X and Drake, just, you know, from the trust that they have and, you know, how long they've known each other. That's magical. It's just one person says one thing and they get it, like, okay, cool. And that was actually, it's not my first time meeting Drake, but my first time working with him. And he was like, yo, straight up, I just wanted my Sean Paul Give Me the Light moment.
Man.
I just wanted that. Like, I've always like loved that video. Love that. I was like, damn, dude. He's like, hell yeah. So I need to bubble you better than X did. And I'm like, okay. You know, so it was a lot of fun. It was dope. And then through that music video, I've been able to work with him on several videos for him, and then help put his tour together when it comes to like the dance aspect.
Yeah.
So I've done the last three tours with him, which is cool, you know?
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
We started off this conversation talking about how you have so much music in your basement and you know, from your father's collection and everything. I was wondering what around your house gives you inspiration in terms of dance, like while you're stuck inside?
Oh, you know what? It's my basement, babe. Like, going in, our basement is not finished. Like, there's like a dance room that, you know, my mom purposely keeps that way. And it's just the four walls, the couch. I just go there and I just start to think. Like, I'm a dancing baby. So it's not hard for me to like get up and start to move, but what gives me or has been giving me inspiration is being away from it. You know, like, you know what they say about being far away from somebody and not seeing them makes you love them even more when you see them.
Yep.
Yeah. It's rejuvenated my love for what I do, where, you know, it's been quite a few times. It's turned into a job. Guys, because it's, you know, I've been blessed to like constantly be working, but it's constantly working and I have to like fight to like, baby girl, you still love this, and like stop thinking so hard and stop, like have a moment. And I'm falling in love with just dancing and moving and music. Again, I've been listening to a lot of old stuff that I'm like, whoa, and finding different songs now, going back to verses again, like I'm like looking at songwriters and I'm like, whoa, this person is dope, and you know, listening to lyrics more and stuff. So that's it. I'm falling back in love.
That's crazy. With my first love. Wonderful. I know that, so you know, it was not easy for our parents when we were like, we're gonna, you know, do what we do. They're like, what are hip hop sketch comedians? And then, you know, a decade later, you know, it's understood, right? How was it when you went into the arts, and what did your parents want you to do or hope that you would do as a career?
Well, my dad was supportive with a contingency plan. Well, just as long as you still run track and get that scholarship and you still do school, you know, you can hang out with me in the basement and dance, and you can, you know, go to government and go to these clubs. Like, he used to drive my sister and I to like clubs at night and stuff with their friends. Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But then there's mama. She was like, are you kidding me? When I was go-go dancing at this club called Spectrum, she was like, I can't believe my child is a stripper. I said, mommy, I'm not. She was like, how is this going to make you money and blah, blah, blah. And how can you fit? I was like, oh boy. She had no idea.
By the way, strippers make a lot of money.
Exactly. I'm like, mom, I don't know. I think I should have been. And now she's like, yeah, you're right. But because she'd come straight to the strip club with me. But no, back then she had no clue. And she just thought that, okay, you need a proper 9-to-5. You need to be either a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher or something, or have a trade. You know, so I actually went to school for physical therapy. That's what I went to University of Windsor for.
Really?
Still
movement.
Just is athletics. Yes. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It was. And that's what we thought I was going to do, but I ended up leaving school. I didn't drop out, but I ended up dropping out because I got a tour, and I was like, okay, I'll just start my semester, you know, in the fall. And the tour lasted longer. I was like, okay, I'll do it in January. January came and I was still on tour, and I said, okay, I'll just do online. And then online went to the shit. So,
so what was the moment where your parents were like, oh, we get it. Like, was it a VMA? Was it like, you know, some type of performance that they could see, or was it just a feeling, or was it time?
My dad loved it, but my mom turned when she met Maya. So I had to bribe. So she met a superstar. So she was like, oh, you know, I've always wanted to Nisha to dance. And I'm like, really? Is that so? That's when it changed. But and then once she knew that I can actually take care of myself, and I moved to New York, and she knew that I was financially okay, that's when her head started to turn a little bit. I just had to educate her more, and she got to see me perform and stuff. And of course, meeting Maya was the icing on the cake. She's like, okay, no problem. So who are you going to work with next? Can you work with this person? And I'm like, okay, here we go. That was it.
Was there any, you're living at home right now. Was there any second thought about moving home? Like, did you think, okay, I'll stay in LA, I'll stay in New York, I'll stay somewhere else? Or was it always just like, okay, the quarantine's coming in, I should go home?
I was in New York for about 2 weeks. So New York is pretty much is my base. That's, I would call New York my home away from home. And then of course, really from Toronto, I stay here with my mom. But, after the 2 weeks, I realized when it started getting really bad in New York, I said, okay, let me come home. And not just because I felt a little safer, because I was going to be indoors anyhow, but I just wanted to be closer to my mom and my dad and my, you know, my immediate family, since I never get to come home because I'm always in New York or always in LA. I was like, this is my time to actually pseudo spend time with my family. So that's the main reason why, because I hardly ever come back home unless if it's for work or it's Christmas time.
Yeah. Well, Tanisha, we love you. Take care of yourself. Take care of everyone in your circle.
Thank you.
And listen, take care of yourself up in Toronto. the next time you're in New York, I hope that we're all able to see each other in real life. And I hope that we're not in Los Angeles, or I hope that when we're in Los Angeles, you're not, you know, in New York, and we can be in the same city at the same time. We look forward to sitting down with you and really chopping it up. This was great. Stay creative. And we're looking forward to everything you come up with while you're in those four walls. Take care of yourself, and we'll check in soon. All right.
Oh, I adore you guys. Thank you so much. And the same to you.
Thanks so much. Talk soon.
Okay. You got it. Bye.
All right, Jeff, let's go out to Los Angeles, California, and connect with the one and only Jerry Lorenzo.
Yo, yo.
Jerry, what's happening?
Man, y'all sound excited.
Yeah, we've been doing rails of cocaine for the past 3 hours.
Listen, Jerry, how have you been getting through these crazy day of days?
Oh, man, I've just spent a lot of time with my kids. I feel like we've spent a little too much time on the couch between watching Trolls back-to-back and NBA 2K, but honestly, man, like, you know, really blessed to be able to do nothing with them is like, it has been really amazing. If I look back this past month, and you know, this is time I never would have had, you know, and so selfishly I just look at, you know, I know the world is going through a lot of pain, but just being able to be here and be locked in the house with the people that you love is pretty priceless.
Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine. I just saw that you were able to use your son, Jerry the Third, in a Zoom like campaign, or like in a campaign using Zoom.
Yeah. We did that with Pierre Toussaint out of Australia, a good friend of mine who has shot the last two or three of our like Fear of God campaigns. And he had this idea. This was all him, of doing something and kind of like directing it through Zoom. And I love the idea. I mean, we're just consuming so much information like through this like you know, non-HD lens right now.
Yeah.
And so I thought it would be dope to kind of like do this like grainy shoot through the lens of kind of how we've been receiving information on the day-to-day lately. So came out pretty cool.
Okay, so we've talked about Jerry the Third. I want to talk about Jerry the First, your father, because we grew up in a Mets household, and lifelong Mets fans. You didn't grow up a Mets fan because your father wasn't with the franchise until he managed, or was a coach, a coach in the managed. But when he became the manager of the Mets, does that mean that you then became a Mets fan as well?
It's, you know, with my dad being in baseball, I mean, it's whatever team he's with immediately is like my favorite team of all time. However, the 86 Mets are like my favorite baseball team of all time.
Yeah.
And he was even with the Expos back then. But I just remember, like, I mean, the rock stars, man, baseball just hasn't seen anything like that, you know, since then. But, no, it was great when he got the chance to go to New York and coach and manage with the Mets, because that's just, as a kid, I've just always had a special place in my heart for the Mets. And so I still love the Mets to this day. So
that's dope. So when we talk about Chicago, when we talk about New York, when we talk about L.A., where is your heart really?
My heart now is in Los Angeles. I've been here since like 2003. I came here to finish grad school and just ended up staying, working retail and hustling. And but I've been here, you know, for the past like 17 years or so, 17, 18 years. So.
Yeah. And given that and given these like unprecedented times, how do you find your city of Los Angeles to be right now if you get in a car and you drive? Like, what's it like out there?
It's scary. I don't want to use the word scary, man. I hate all this fear that's happening, but it's just so strange, man. It's strange. I mean, it's like not like New York, where you're so used to seeing this pedestrian like lifestyle, you know, in LA, we all live in our cars, but even like the roads and like, you never see a LA freeway empty.
Yeah.
You know, it's just very, very strange times, man. Very, very strange is like the only word. And I apologize for my lack of vocabulary, but that's like the only word that comes to mind right
now. For sure. For sure.
I think that like what I've been finding is just like, there's a sadness in like in walking around and in like the situation that we've gotten to this point. You know, it's just like, I can't believe that I have such a fear of being close to people in the grocery store. I can't believe that you need to have a mask on when you go to the grocery store. Like it's a very like apocalyptic sort of time that we're living in.
Yeah.
Yeah, super, man. And I just feel like, you know, and I kind of talked about this on and I'm probably talking too much. And I was like, do I want to do this right now? Because I still feel like I'm trying to get what it is that God is like trying to give me through this like tough time to like, what am I supposed to learn that I can give back to the world? Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm in this weird state where we're all trying to figure that out, but yeah. We're also trying to encourage one another. But I just feel like we got to like feed ourselves, you know, as much faith as we're feeding ourselves fear.
I think,
you
know, that, however, yeah. No, I think that just like even connecting with people over the phone, over FaceTime has been a very human thing, you know, because we're all sort of separated. We live in these four walls. We don't see people on a regular basis, but just to connect, to even like speak out loud to other people has been very rewarding for us, you know, to sort of like reach outside these windows and hopefully you found that as well.
Yeah, and hopefully, like, we, you know, we text less going in the future, and we pick up the phone and we hear voices, or we FaceTime and see faces. And like, you know, we had moved to this place of like texting, and like, you know, this human interaction had like not been what it should have been in living in the year like 2020. You know, human interaction was going down.
Yeah.
If you think about it, the way that we talk and the way that we interact with one another, and hopefully it comes back. You know, just, you know, I think the appreciation of being able to see faces and to communicate and hear voices that we're all like thirsting for in this moment.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like we had moved to this like technical or digital space where everything was kind of cold and flat and without context. And now I just feel like now we're all like really thirsting for this like human interaction that that we've really been missing for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, are you somebody who can work right now, or are you just like taking a complete step back and just like concentrating on family and Zoom calls with your kids, you know, and their schooling and stuff? Like, what, where's your headspace right now?
I think the first week was like was tough, and then the second week was like, all right, I'm finding a rhythm with work. And then the third week hit and I was like, oh man, I have to get used to this, because this might be the new reality. And so I wish I could give you an answer, but it's like evolving every day.
Yeah,
you know. And so I'm trying to get as much work as I can do, you know, at home. You know, I've got all my samples and I've got all my mood boards and the, you know, my collection in front of me, you know, on printouts, but, you know, our factories are stopped right now.
Yeah.
Across the world. And it's not like I can get a sample done or anything like that. So, or we can't produce anything and sell it. So a lot of it's at a standstill, but you know, crisis is, you know, the birthplace of creativity.
Yeah.
You know, it's just this paradox of innovation that we're in right now that that I'm hoping catapults us selfishly as a brand to like another level.
Well, then that begs the question. I mean, seemingly you take months and months and months to plan things, so that like if you have a release that's coming out now, it's been done way, way long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where is your head now in terms of creativity, and does your mood board reflect where you're at now, or is that also from 6 months ago?
Great question. I think whatever we had in the books or whatever we had that was done, if it hasn't hit the world, it has to be reconsidered. You know, I think it's selfish to present ideas based on a world that we were living in a month ago. And I think we have to consider the atmosphere and consider the environment and consider people and now what you present to them at such a higher level. And not to say that we weren't considering our demographic before, but we were considering them based on different times.
For sure.
And I think as a creative, you know, your responsibility as a creative is to speak to the times. And we've got to do that through the way we communicate with the collection, through the amount of pieces that we put out and what those pieces look like and what those pieces say. Are those pieces impressing or inspiring? Make sure they're doing the latter. Make sure we're inspiring. This isn't an atmosphere to be boastful or impressive.
Yeah.
So really just like, you know, taking a step back, man. And, you know, there's obviously some things that we've had, like you mentioned the triple black sneaker that's been in the works and that obviously is going through a much larger machine through Nike. Sure. And has a release date and has to hit. But there's other things that we're doing internally that we have the ability to press pause on and like reconsider them and make some hard decisions on whether or not they see the light of day.
You know, you mentioned that you're watching Trolls with your kids, which is not an aesthetic that I would normally associate with you, but what else are you watching? Like, what else is getting you through, you know, these monotonous sort of times? Like, you know, there's a lot of time left to fill. What are you filling it with?
I'm not the coolest guy to be speaking about this kind of like, pop culture stuff, but like, I mean, I'm feeding myself with like as much like spiritual messages as I can from like, you know, pastors and preachers that I look up to in the mornings. And then, you know, I'm here with my family. And so selfishly, I can't really go in my room and watch that vintage, like late 80s or early 90s movie that I want to, because I've got my kids in the other room and it's like, I need to be spending time with them. And so I am like, you know, not that Trolls is not tasteful, but yeah, we're spending a lot of time on Disney Plus and like, yeah. You know, and I'm trying to like, you know, squeeze in some, you know, Three Men and a Baby and some old school movies that we can both get a little bit out of. Cause you know, I'm looking at the movie and checking out like, you know, Tom Selleck in his New Balance in his short shorts. Yeah. And taking notes. And, you know, they're just watching the movie for what it is. But I usually watch a lot of like old movies and just really look at like the styling and not really pay attention to
the plot lines. Yeah. Listen, I would suggest you watch the 1986 A Year to Remember VHS. That's what I would pick up, you know?
Yeah, get some like hot foot.
Yeah. If you're inside for, you know, the next couple of months, what's the one thing you miss from your like life pre-COVID-19? Like, is it like going to the Rose Bowl and like on a Sunday morning and like going through?
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all that, man. I miss seeing like the people that I work with on a day to day. I think we miss what we work so hard to make our normal. You know, we work so hard to get to a place to get the brand where it is and, you know, my home life where it is to create what we feel is normal in the life that we want to live. And so now that all that is shaken, you don't want to go back to that and you want to get the lessons from this and then apply it to this new world that we're all like, you know, about to face. You know, I hate to kind of go back to doing everything that I used to love doing and not learn the lesson of this time and made whatever changes that I need to make. And so
for sure. And how do your kids then take lessons from this and grow in a time that's really brand new to them as well?
Man, that's a great question. And you know what? I don't know that. I think they're just enjoying this long summer vacation, that the spring break that went from 1 week to a month. And so I'm hoping we're kind of growing closer as a family. They definitely miss their friends. They definitely miss going to school. I'm hoping they just have a greater appreciation all around for life and humanity. And that's all I can really hope for as a dad.
Yeah. You know, we've had a lot of people in our pre-COVID-19 world too. You know, our podcast was based around like a guest sitting down with us in our apartment and having these like hour and a half conversations. I know we were talking to you about doing one when we went to Los Angeles, but we've had so many people come over here, Jadakiss and Jim Jones in particular, who when they heard that you were potentially going to be on the podcast, were so excited about that. What do you get from musicians, especially now, and their music when you think of your creativity?
My daughter just came in here like that one meme at the
house. in the back. Yeah.
can you run that back?
Absolutely. we've had a lot of musicians come over here, Jim Jones and Jadakiss in particular, who are humongous fans of yours, and we're like, yo, whenever Jerry comes down to sit down with you guys for the podcast, I want to be there. What do artists like Jimmy and Jadakiss and others like bring to your life, just like you bring something to theirs?
Oh man, it's just like that hustle spirit, you know. I think, you know, when I was listening to them, you know, I was just a college kid, or you know what I mean. I was trying to, you know, work in retail or trying to figure out what my hustle was going to be, and you know, those guys really just inspired me from afar, you know. And so now that you know, Jim came by the studio last year and picked up some sneakers, and me and my brother were just like, you know, kids again. Like Jim Jones is here. Oh my God. You know what I mean? We're trying to talk about old stuff. He's trying to talk about stuff that's happening right now. You know, I think once you start getting to a place where you're creating and putting things out in the world, you know, it's like that Jewel's bar. Like, you know, I bring it all in the booth, you know, my life experience is all in the booth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, once you connect with somebody like that, that, you know, is putting everything they have into whatever gifts and talents that God has given them, it's just a different level of like connection and appreciation, and a lot can go unsaid, and you just kind of appreciate the presence of that other creative or that other person. But yeah, man, I was so happy when Jim Jones put out that album last year. I just felt like it's so hard to modernize what you've made popular like years ago.
Yeah.
And I thought he did a tremendous job with that last album, and like,
oh, for sure.
Staying honest to who he was and still modernizing his sound and like,
and being better, you know, than he's ever been before. So that also makes me think, like, you know, when Jim gets asked about like the past, he may be like, oh yeah, like I did go through that, but I have this new project now too. Do you also go through that where people are like, yo, your collection from like 3 years ago was it? And you're like, yeah, but I got this thing that's coming out now that I'd love to talk about. Where do you fall with that when people sort of ask that of you?
It's always that same exact kind of thing that you just kind of mentioned. It's like, you know, I'm continuing, you know, what you loved about me 3 years ago, and this is just the new lens of how I'm telling that story. You know what I mean? And it's like, I think you always want to keep in mind what you promised people when you first came out, and that promise that they're holding on to, and how are you evolving that promise, and changing in an honest way that recognizes what's given you the platform that you have, you know. You if a far departure is honestly where you are creatively, like, I don't want to like say that's the wrong thing to do, but I think it's just important to like always acknowledge that, you know, in a way that also pays respect to the people that do follow you. And so it is this kind of like thin line of like maturation and maturing and like holding on to the past too much. You know, and I think like, you know, like Jay-Z has done like a phenomenal job in like kind of like showing hip hop how to like mature.
Yeah.
You know, I think as a creative and anyone that can influence pop culture, there's a danger in this like Peter Pan mentality of like trying to stay young and stay in this space. And I think the real challenge is, can you grow and mature and also still like influence at the same time, at absolutely the same level?
And that's why I've gotten such a nice feeling by seeing, you know, like Puff is like letting his beard grow out and you can see the gray hairs, or like Khaled is out there, you know, and you see the gray like above his ears. And that's like, yo, they are really that age. They're human. They're fathers. They're still enjoying themselves and still putting out dope content. But like the reality is, like, we're not all getting haircuts right now. We're not all, you know, coloring our gray hairs and all that. That's just who they are.
Yeah, actually, Jerry, are you getting a haircut?
I'm doing it myself. It's not the best. I'm glad that we're not on Zoom. You can see how I messed my beard up right now, and so now I'm like, man, this thing might need to go on for another month because I can't be seen right now. I just kind of messed myself up.
Are you gonna adjust your Memoji as you evolve inside?
that's a good point. I always kind of had that kind of like grizzly beard, so I don't know that I can adjust it much more, but I might have to kind of make it not as sexy as he once was.
Yeah, mine is my Memoji is Tekashi 6ix9ine, which is an interesting thing to send to like Bun B or something. But when you're like, you know, we're all inside, there's nobody really to impress, but are you still putting effort into the way that you dress? Are you just like wandering out in like sweats, like, you know, just keeping it super cozy?
I look horrible. I mean my clothes are kind of, they are what they are. I mean, I just wear the same like essential sweats and hoodie, but as far as like my hair and like, you know, my facial hair, I look pretty crazy.
Jerry, you're a storyteller, we're storytellers. Storytelling is just extremely important right now. What is the story moving forward for you?
I'm trying to get it, man. I wish I had the answer for you. You know, I'm trying to find it. I'm trying to find it in this moment of crisis, you know, in this moment of crisis where creativity is supposed to be at its highest. Sometimes I'm feeling at my lowest and I'm like,
isn't that crazy, by the way?
Yeah, but I feel like that's like the honest answer. It's like, you know, everybody's sort of cycling between this thing of, I feel like I have a handle on what's happening, and then 2 minutes later being like, oh no, everything's falling apart.
Or like there's some expectation like, okay, now I'm at home, I'm only focused on what I have to do, and people are like, but I don't have that feeling in me right now.
Yeah,
it's tough. It's tough, man. And I think the reality is kind of like circling back to what we talked about before, is like just the importance of like human connection and like interacting with other people and, you know, social distancing, but just social connection, where so much of what we say back to the world is informed by how we're interacting with one another. You know what I mean? It's like how would you put out like a hip hop song right now with no one to go to a club and dance to it?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like if I don't have the context to create the memory to what's being created, it's, you know what I mean? Like how is it being lived in and consumed is like, you know, so yeah, man, it's tough, man. It's tough because it's like, you know, you're supposed to be in this time coming out of here with answers and finding the answers. And sometimes, man, it's just like the heaviness of our times is just blinds the creativity, man. So, yeah.
Well, a couple of things. One, I do love that about 10 minutes ago, Jerry was like, oh, my vocabulary is so trash. And then, you know, now you're talking about like Peter Pan theory and everything else that you've said, and you sounded so smart.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I was wondering, since we're at the end of the interview and since I'm not going to watch the movie, if you could just spoil the Trolls movie for me.
You know what, though? Like, Trolls, it was pretty dope, dude. They had this character that is, like, so, like, my spirit animal. This dude, Chaz. And he's, like, this, like, yacht rock, like smooth jazz dude. And like, I was like, if that's not my troll. And so, anyhow, yeah. So that's like, you got to watch it just to see that dude and like listen to him play is amazing. But yeah, I mean, I thought Trolls was kind of like, it's kind of like they took, dang, I can't think of the name of that movie where they like had all those feelings and memories.
Three Men and a Baby. No. Oh, no, you're thinking of Inside Out.
Yeah.
Inside Out. It's like they took Inside Out and like a couple other themes and like made it about music, and it's Trolls. But the music is great. So that's kind of like the spoiler, is that like in the end, all music is necessary and we all celebrate our differences, blah blah blah.
Yo, I'm glad that you love that movie, because I'm sure your kids are gonna have that on repeat for the next 4 weeks, and you're gonna be hearing those songs all the time.
we gotta rent it. Like I've had to rent it twice now, because it's not for sale yet on Apple. Like, you gotta only rent it for like 48 hours.
Oh so. My god,
imagine going broke by watching Trolls every over 2 days.
Re-renting the movie.
Yo, well, listen, Jerry, stay safe out there, take care of you and yours, and be creative when it strikes you. You know, I think that your voice is super important right now. I think that whatever, you know, comes out of this is going to be strong and smart and truly necessary, whether that is like inspired by Trolls, if it's inspired by the 1986 Mets, or
if it's just essential.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, shout out to you, Jerry. Hopefully when this is all said and done, we'll make it out to LA and sit down for that long-awaited interview, and until then, just be well. All right,
no doubt, appreciate your time, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Peace.
Shout out to Jerry Lorenzo. Shout out to Tanisha Scott. And shout out to Fabulous. Jeff, are we back tomorrow?
We are back every day forever.
As always, guys, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.